Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
Dismiss!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on the day that the Duke and Duchess of Sussex will deign to tell us the name of their firstborn child. The big question is, will they throw us a fake name and then tell us the truth later? That's the way they've done everything else so far. I wouldn't be at all surprised if they produce a baby that isn't even the real one, just so that they can keep him out of the limelight. Meanwhile, back in the land of Brexit, there is yet another deadline being set for Prime Minister Theresa May, this time for her to leave Downing Street. And it has now been confirmed, rather unsurprisingly, that the European elections are indeed taking place on May the 23rd, which everyone already knew. They're actually campaigning and have been campaigning for the last couple of weeks. What exactly are the government up to, and when are they going to confirm that we are actually leaving the European Union, which is what that referendum was all about back in 2016. Do you remember? 0344 499 1000. We've got Prime Minister's questions coming up. Ross Kempson will be joining us, of course, for that, as per usual. Also, coming up first, I'm sorry to report that we will be bringing you news that the MPs who run this country so badly have not actually learned their lesson. After the expenses debacle of a decade ago, it turns out that hundreds of them have had their official expenses credit cards suspended. Let's just say that again. They have overspent on their official credit cards, paid for by us, supplied by us, sanctioned by us. I don't remember being asked about that, and I certainly wouldn't have said it was a good idea. Jeremy Corbyn has had his suspended twice. Boris Johnson has had his suspended once. Last year, the expenses bill for all of these people collectively was £117.4 million. And they're not even doing their jobs properly. 0344 499 1000. Coming up a bit later on, we'll be finding out why we're all having less sex and why tourists are now in the front line of the battle against plastic pollution, particularly in the rich people's paradise of Capri. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, many of you, of course, will have been completely and utterly buried in the publicity surrounding the birth of the new royal baby. And today we may find out what the new royal baby's name is likely to be. And we may even get a first glimpse at him, which will all be lovely, of course. But we'll also have Prime Minister's questions. We will also have yet another late afternoon meeting between the 1922 committee and the Prime Minister, at which point they'll try to get her to agree to a timetable to leave. Why can't we get a timetable to leave the European Union, which is what, in fact, we voted for? But before we get to any of that, let's talk about something far more irritating, because you will all remember the moats and the ridiculous expenses, the second homes, the widescreen TVs, the porn magazines and the porn films that people were claiming for on their expenses. That was all put into the past, into the dustbin of history, after the Daily Telegraph exposed how much money and how ridiculous the MPs' expenses system was in the Houses of Parliament. They then changed the system. However, it would appear, thanks to a report that's just come out today, that things are not going as well as perhaps they should have been. Let's talk to Sir Alistair Graham, who's the former chair of the Committee of Standards in Public Life, a very fine, upstanding member of our supposed lawmaking community, who must be appalled by this. Sir Alistair, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. Now, it comes as a bit of a surprise to me, this. I don't know whether I wasn't paying attention, but I really didn't know that as a way of trying to improve the expenses system, that Parliament actually issued official credit cards to individual MPs.
Yes. Well, you can understand how it arose as an improvement, because previously MPs had to pay money for legitimate expenses out of their own pocket and then reclaim it at some later stage.
Yes.
and therefore the credit cards were issued to avoid that situation arising. But it turns out that they've abused that privilege.
Yes.
377 of them. And,
which is more than half, we should say, isn't it?
Misclaimed or haven't repaid items previously they shouldn't have claimed. And therefore the system has come in disrepute. And what is particularly shocking is that IPSA worked so hard to try and avoid this information coming out.
Well, that's unfortunate for me as well, because surely one of the things we learned about the expenses scandal was that transparency is very important in a modern democracy. People know much more now than they used to know. They have access to much more information on the internet. They can Google all kinds of things. The idea that IPSA tried to keep this secret, I think, is even more galling than the actual story itself.
Yes, well, they said it would have a chilling effect on their relationship with MPs, but they clearly didn't take into account the chilling effect it would have on the public.
Well, exactly. And, I mean, to be honest, I understand where you're coming from, where you say, look, they had to try and change the system and they had to try and make it a bit more accountable and they had to get a grip of it. But I can't imagine in any company I've ever worked for, and mostly I've been in the media all my life, where you've overspent on your expenses and they've thrown out some of your expenses and said, I'm sorry, well, you're not allowed to claim that. But here's a credit card on the company that you can use instead.
Well, I've explained how I think it came about, but it is truly shocking. For example, how the Amber Rudd, who was pension secretary and benefit secretary for a period, does she think about how this would have been handled if it had been somebody overclaiming Social Security benefits?
Well, exactly. I mean, we've got lots of instances here, which I will read a couple of them out to you. Energy Minister Claire Perry, who attends the Cabinet, admitted wrongly using her parliamentary credit card to pay for her Amazon Prime subscription. DUP MP Ian Paisley ran up debts of £1,193 and had his credit card suspended while repaying it. I mean, do you think that they were offered or given any set of guidelines and rules when they were given these cards?
I'm sure they were, and I'm sure they knew what the... Which is why I've described it as slovenly, incompetent behaviour.
Mm.
And it just shows the double standards that can apply between ordinary members of the public and members of Parliament.
Yes, absolutely right. And of
they
course...
They should be deeply ashamed of themselves.
They should be, but once again, we have a system which appears not to work terribly well. You know, 377 MPs, that's more than half of them, have run into trouble using these cards. So maybe it's time for them to think again, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure it is. And IPSA, who are going to be clearly embarrassed by the whole situation, will have to think of a reform and of new arrangements that safeguards public money.
Mm. Because one of the things that you can still do, of course, is you can look up, not so much in as great detail as you used to be able to, but you can look up overall large amounts of money being spent. And to be fair to MPs, which I like to think I am, even though I'm very critical of them, a lot of the expenses are office expenses, are they not?
Yes.
So they are paying. So when we say £117 million a year, much of that is actually in office expenses, hiring people to sit in their office and all of that. But it's also, it seems to me, a very free and easy way of claiming lots and lots of things that you wouldn't in the normal course of events be able to claim, for example, as an individual businessman or as an individual claiming against tax. There's very little you can now claim as an expense.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think to be fair to IPSA, they have tightened up the regime, and at least they were moving quickly to suspend people.
Yeah.
But given what's shocking is the scale of the abuse taking on. 377 MPs.
Yes.
We've only got 650 or something. So,
that's right. Well, that's what I mean. It's more than half. And if they can't...
The scale of what's happened does show that the present arrangements cannot continue.
Well, I think it shows, if you were going to be charitable, that the MPs have a very cavalier attitude to an expenses system, which they feel they can charge all sorts of things to until it gets chucked out. And in no commercial organisation is that now the case, because expenses are kept a very tight lid upon, and the days of, you know, Wall Street craziness where people would go out and think nothing of spending 12 grand on dinner, and I know that because my sister used to do it, you know, even they don't allow that anymore. You know, merchant banks are not allowing expenses in the way that they were. So it's about time, I think, that they started to think about getting everything for nothing, because if you're an MP, it seems like you could charge everything. Your entire life gets charged to the public purse.
Well, I think there are pretty strict rules in place about what they can claim and what they cannot claim. But the way that they've abused this credit card system is deeply worrying and should worry them, because it just trust in politicians is a pretty all-time low.
Yeah.
But presumably, from the Prime Minister downwards, they're trying to increase the amount of trust.
But when you get people like Amber Rudd, Boris Johnson, Jeremy Corbyn, senior figures in the Parliament, right?
Yes.
Two of them in the... one of them in the current cabinet, I should say. One of them vying to be the next Prime Minister. The other one vying to be the next Prime Minister of the current opposition. You say, well, if they're getting it wrong, then what sort of an example is that setting?
Well, I can only agree with that.
Yeah, well, what should we do, though, Sir Alistair? Because I seem to remember when you were in charge, things were slightly better run. Parliament now seems to be like the Wild West. Nobody seems to do their job properly. They don't seem to represent the people who elected them. They can't get a vote through on Brexit. I mean, you know, now we find out they can't even fill out their own expenses forms.
Well, I still think it's right to have an independent body governing the expenses for members of Parliament. And that may be part of the resentment of MPs that they're not in control, because under the old arrangements they control their own expenses system.
Yes.
And that led to the major scandal that was published 10 years ago.
Yes.
I just think there has to be greater discipline in these matters, and it should be a disciplinary offence.
Do you know what I would do? And I don't know whether you think this is a good idea, but I would give all MPs a fixed amount of money, which would be expenses and salary. They could do whatever they want with it. Now, say, for example, you said to them, here's £200,000, right? That includes your salary. If you need to spend more than £120,000 of that on expenses, then you can, but then your salary has to be reduced. Do you know what I mean? And I think that
Don't think that system would work, because if you were the Member of Parliament for, I don't know, the Shetland.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that.
In North Scotland.
You don't need as much money as Shetland.
Somebody
though,
who just lived round the corner, that would clearly be a monstrously unfair system.
Well, then perhaps if they were colleagues in the same party, they could maybe channel some of the money elsewhere. I just think we need to find a better system. You know, for example, why would the member for Camberwell then not, give a portion of his money to the member for Shetland?
Yeah, but that wouldn't work, wouldn't it? That wouldn't work.
Well, this doesn't work either.
It's very practical to me. I'm in favour of reform.
Okay. What's your idea, then?
I mean, there are plenty of changes that could be made. For example, I think it's wrong that MPs employ their own family members.
Yes.
In their offices. So there's plenty of scope for change. Mm. It just has to be brought about quickly and properly disciplined.
And who would be responsible for that? Is it IPSA, or do the MPs themselves have to kind of debate it?
Well, the Speaker of the House of Commons has a sort of key committee that controls a lot that happens in the House of Commons.
Yeah.
He could pay some attention to it. But it's in everybody's interest, including the MPs, to reform the system.
Yes. Well, how about this? Just as a taster for some of the tweets and things I'm getting in, this one from Pete. I have a company credit card, he says, for legitimate company expenses. If I misuse it, it won't get authorised, and ultimately I could be sacked. Let's have the same for MPs. That's what we don't see, I'm afraid.
No, well, it's very difficult to sack. Well, we've just seen an MP sacked because of a criminal charge. So there are means these days, and that's a recent reform, whereby we can recall.
Yeah, but she was sacked by her own constituents rather than by the actual government and by the Parliament, you know?
Yeah, but there is a discipline system in place, and I think that should be used, with a parliamentary commissioner referring it to the Standards Committee for individual MPs so that they can personally discipline and have to apologise in front of the whole House of Commons.
Yes. Yes, well, I think something needs to be done. Sir Alistair, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed for it. And let's hope we can find a way through to a bit more fairness in the world.
OK, thank you.
Thank you. Sir Alistair Graham, their former chair of the Committee of Standards in Public Life. He doesn't think my idea would work. I think it would work brilliantly, right? Here's what you do. 200,000 apiece. They're all spending a lot more than that at the moment, because don't forget, they're getting paid upwards of 70,000 quid in a salary. So then they get another load of expenses on top of that, which can be as much as 150,000-200,000 quid if they're running a big office or two offices and all of that. And if they can't manage on £200,000 a year, expenses and salary, I'm sorry, then they should not be giving themselves forward as public servants. It's not about raking in the cash. If you want to be a public servant, you're supposed to have some kind of feeling for public service. You're supposed to want to help the public and to run the country in such a way that it runs well, not that it runs badly and you get to leave and become a millionaire. I'm sorry, that is not the plan. 0344 499 1000. I know loads of you will want to talk about this. Loads of you will get on. You can tweet us, of course, at Talk Radio. We will be coming up later on with some news from the Royal Baby Front. Supposedly they're going to tell us, or they're going to deign to give us some information on what the baby's name is going to be. We had some tries at that yesterday. We're not going to do that again today. Also, of course, we will be talking about Capri, a beautiful island off the coast of Naples. And apparently, you're going to be banned from taking any one-time use plastics there. So don't go there with a plastic bag. Don't go there with a bottle of water, because they'll start fining you. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
It's up in my heart when it skips a beat.
Skips a beat.
Can't feel no pavement right under my feet.
Oh, 0344 499 1000. Loads of you want to talk to me this morning. You will get on. Don't worry. We're here until 1 o'clock when it's time for Matthew Wright. 0344 499 1000. Coming up in a moment, we're going to speak to Ben Clapworthy from The Times. He's a travel writer. He's a man who knows all about why the very, very beautiful and luxurious island of Capri, just off the coast of Naples, is going to be banning plastic, single-use plastic. If you turn up there with a water bottle, which is plastic, they will not like it. If you turn up with a plastic bag, they will not like it. They don't want you taking stuff on the beach. It's the first kind of wave of anti-tourism of manoeuvres, I would say, by places who are fed up with tourists leaving stuff behind that they really shouldn't leave behind. But before we do that, let me just quickly talk to Gerard, who's in Crewe. Hello, Gerard.
Morning, Mike.
How are you doing?
That's Sir Alistair. When I was a civil servant, he was one of my bosses.
Was he?
He's a decent bloke.
He's a good guy,
yeah. He's a genuinely decent
bloke. Well, he's called Graham, you know.
Well, I'll call him Sir Alistair.
Right.
If you wish. Look, I was a public servant for 30-odd years, and expenses were a thing you did not misuse. You were in serious trouble. I can remember being called in once because I rounded up a penny on my mileage, one penny piece, and I was told off for it, and it was under no illusions that you never did that. Now, your mileage was always checked, so you would make a habit of underclaiming rather than go through that experience. So if you did 15 miles, you'd claim 12 rather than... So it was public money. Now, the difference is, it's a bit like Animal Farm. MPs forget that they're public servants. And in their eyes, some public servants are more equal than other public servants.
Well, it's our money, effectively. It's like our previous caller said, if I want to pay for some MP's credit card, I should be able to see the bill. I think that's fair enough.
You see, when I rang Cornelius earlier, I actually said that myself. It should be out there in the open at the end of the year. I can go online and see what my good socialist MP, who, you know, she's a woman of the people, she says.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to see what she's claiming.
I think that would be an excellent plan.
Once they get in there, they just love to, well, help themselves, shall we say.
Well, they do. Absolutely right. It needs to stop. Gerard, great call. Thank you very much indeed. You can do that too. Join in. This is a show that's here for you as much as it is for me. But let's talk to Ben Clapworthy now, travel writer at The Times, because a fascinating story from Capri was in the paper yesterday, talking about how they're going to fine people €500 if you're spotted picnicking with non-recyclable plastic plates or cutlery. Even if you're carrying a non-biodegradable plastic bag, you could be fined. Ben, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Morning, Mike.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Now, this I can sort of see the logic of, but I can also think to myself, well, hang on a minute. If I'm going to Capri, and I've only been there once in my life, it's a very beautiful place. Part of the problem, they say, is people go there and don't spend any money. Well, there's a reason for that. It's because everything's so damn expensive when you go up to the top of the hill and you see all these designer shops and expensive restaurants. But if I'm carrying a plastic bag with a pair of flip-flops in it, technically, they're going to fine me.
Well, yes. I mean, yes, they are, basically. £500 for, yes, as you say, carrying non-recyclable bag. Mm. But also, you say it's expensive. You don't want to eat in the restaurant and you can have a little picnic and you get out your paper plates with plastic paper plates, with the plastic on them, I mean. You'll get fined for that as well, €500 for what they consider misbehaviour.
I mean, can you see this as something which is now going to spread across the world? Because one of the biggest problems we see all over the world, I think there was this one of the Sky reports recently, they found some island in the middle of the South Pacific, which they were washed up about 25,000 pairs of flip-flops.
Yeah, I think there is a movement happening against tourism. Over-tourism is becoming a buzzword. Mm. I was in Edinburgh last week. Where are we now? May. And it was packed, absolutely packed. Yeah. I got in a taxi. The taxi driver said to me, oh, no, the season's just getting underway sort of from March onwards, but wait till, I mean, the Edinburgh Festival in August is an exception, but wait till July time and you can't even move. I thought, well, I can't move already.
Well, London's like that. I mean, if you go to central London now, anywhere sort of like Trafalgar Square, Leicester Square, you know, the Strand, Covent Garden, Soho, I mean, you're literally, you will find that it's difficult to walk down the street without having to get into the road to get out of the way for people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think more and more, I mean, Venice, they're going to start charging people to go into the historic centre. They've had it's going to be €3, which
right.
will come into
really?
Effect in September. Mm. That's to pay for the damage caused by tourism. Their city is obviously very fragile. I was writing last year when they had the floods about the problems that they've got from over-tourism. A lot of it is UNESCO have decided a lot of the problem is caused by massive cruise liners.
We call
it cruise crush when they turn up and you have 5,000 passengers descend in a tiny little city. And the waste they leave behind is horrendous. And they don't contribute because they get back onto the boat to eat. They have all their meals on the boat and they don't contribute to society. And there is it to the local communities and there is a backlash. Mm. And more places are wondering, well, how are we going to manage this?
Well, I saw, I'm pretty sure, one of these environmental programmes not that long ago on the BBC from, I think it was Corsica, where there was a guy on a boat who was patrolling the coastline and basically telling people to get off the beaches because they were now preserved areas. And so, I mean, it's a very difficult one to kind of balance this, isn't it? Because on the one hand, most of these places require tourism to exist, because if you're in Capri, the only reason you're making any money is from the tourists, let's face it. And similarly with Corsica, if you're going to tell people, well, you can't come here on your luxury yachts and you can't jump off the back of them, get on a jet ski and go to the island and sit there, people are just going to stop going.
It is a very fine line, and it's very interesting that all of these are governmental or local government policies. They're not the shopkeeper. The shopkeeper with his shop in Capri is more than happy if a cruise ship of passengers turn
up.
Because if one person buys a handbag for €500, he's happy days.
Mm.
Does he care? There is a movement, an environmental movement happening. There's no question about that. But it is definitely the case that local people, lots of them benefit from tourism, and they won't necessarily want these rules to be enforced. And it's also I would be very keen, I don't particularly want to lose £450, but I would be quite interested to take a Tesco carrier bag to Naples and walk to Capri and walk around with it and see how long it
takes. I mean, what if it's a bag for life? Would you get away with that, do you think?
Well, yes, exactly. I could tell them I've used it 50 times, so
I mean, you can imagine there are people, and I'm not suggesting that I would be one of them, but I might, who would be slightly irritable if some, member of the Carabinieri came up to me and tried to hand me a penalty fine. I think I might say, I'm not going to pay it, mate. What are you going to do about that? Are you going to arrest me, you know?
Well, I do think that's an interesting point. It's interesting that you say that, because the mayor of Rome says that she is trying to work with ambassadors around the world to bar misbehaving tourists from coming back to Rome. Now, I wonder, yes, they tell you you're going to be fined £500. You tell them to do one and then go away. Are they never going to let you back? I don't think so. But I do think, I mean, there is a good point here. We need to stop chucking plastic into the ocean.
Certainly, there's no question about that. But then, I mean, I think we're all much more, and I said this during the whole Extinction Rebellion occupation of London, we're all far more responsible now than we ever were. I mean, I was never one to throw litter in the first place because it's a disgusting habit and a terrible thing to do. You know, the fact that they're going to now say you can't take a bottle of water, which happens to be made of plastic, with you anywhere, is nonsense, because what they should be doing is saying to the people that make the bottles of plastic water, plastic bottles of water rather, well, don't put them in plastic.
Yes, you're entirely right. And the other thing I think as well is that there's a larger problem here, which is that actually tourist behaviour is what needs to change. You say you don't litter. That, nor do I. Lots of people do. I mean, I saw people littering when I was in Edinburgh. I also saw people walking through a flower bed next to a war memorial to take photos of it. And you think, A, there's hundreds of signs. Yeah. There shouldn't need to be hundreds of signs, but there are hundreds of signs. And why are you walking through a flower bed to take a photograph?
Exactly. Now, in your paper yesterday, there was also a little piece about Holland and the Netherlands being a bit upset with too much tourism. So, I mean, I think the conclusion we come to here, Ben, is that the world's just got too many people in it now.
It does. I was at a travel conference in Seville the other week, and I was listening to a Chinese ambassador talking, and he works with tourism, and he said, only 10% of the Chinese population have passports, but that is growing at a rate of knots. He said, if you think there's a lot of tourists coming from the east already, you've seen nothing. Right. And it's the same everywhere. From Eastern Europe to Britain to America, the more Americans are travelling, more Europeans are travelling. As the middle class gets bigger around the world, more people are starting to travel, and these places are going to see more and more people. I saw an estimate somewhere that even if they stopped promoting tourism in Holland, by 2030, they would have 29 million foreign visitors a year. At the moment, it's 19. I mean, that's astronomical growth.
It is extraordinary, isn't it? Fascinating stuff, though. We should be watching it closely. Ben, thank you very much indeed for your time. Ben Clapworthy there, travel writer at The Times. Extraordinary. What do? You can't stop people from being tourists. You can't stop people from travelling. People want to go places, but they just have to be more and better behaved, surely.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
We've got some urgently breaking news for you. You'll be glad to know that the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, not Wessex, have appeared today and have decided to give us peasants an insight into exactly what they have been doing. And I'm very, very happy and delighted to say to you now that we can hear, for the first time since the royal birth, we can actually hear Meghan and Harry right here, right now.
Meghan, can you tell us what it's like becoming a new mum and tell us a little bit about baby Sussex, as we're calling him?
It's magic. It's pretty amazing. And I mean, I have the two best guys in the world, so I'm really happy.
Tell us a little bit about your son. What's he like? Is he sleeping well? Good baby?
Yes. He has the sweetest temperament. He's really calm and...
He gets that from.
Yeah, and he's just been the dream, so it's been a special couple days.
Who does he take after? Does he look like anyone?
We're still trying to figure that out.
Well, everyone says that babies change so much over 2 weeks. We're basically sort of monitoring how the changing process happens over this next month, really. But his looks are changing every single day.
Yeah,
so
true.
Who knows?
And how do you find parenting generally? What's it? Is it still a special moment?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, parenting is amazing. It's it's only been, what, 2.5 days, 3 days?
Yeah.
But we're just so thrilled to have our own little bundle of joy, and be able to spend some precious times with him as he slowly starts to grow up.
And I hear you're off to see two special people in a minute.
Yes.
The Queen and the Duke.
Yes, and we just bumped into the Duke as we were walking by, which was so nice. So it'll be a nice moment to introduce the baby to more family, and my mom's with us as well. So it's been a really... Here we go.
Another great grandchild.
Yes.
Can we have a little peek at him? We just can't quite see his face.
Oh.
Wow.
He's already got a little bit of facial hair as well. Wonderful.
Just in the family.
All right, thank you.
Thank you all
very
so much.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you everybody for all the well wishes and the kindness. Mm. It just means so much.
Prince Harry and Meghan, they're talking for the first time since the birth of their child together. Rachel Jewell is here. Rachel, well.
Hi, Mike. Yes.
So, any tears in your eyes?
Oh, beautiful statement. Mm. So let's paint the picture for our listeners. That was in St George's Hall, very grand surroundings there,
yes.
Windsor Castle.
Very nice.
And for those who are interested, Meghan is dressed in a white frock, a white dress.
Sleeveless. Yeah.
Harry is the one carrying their son. He's in a nice, sharp grey suit.
Mm.
Absolutely beaming. I know
they do look very happy, I must say.
Say that about new mums, but she is absolutely glowing. Not quite, you know, when Kate got a lot of flack, didn't she, when she came out with all her hair done?
Yeah, which was, I think, a bit unfair, to be honest, because you can't, on the one hand, expect them to be on public display and then not prepare to be on public display. Do you know what I mean?
So, I mean, she's clearly got makeup there, but hair's down, loose. But, yeah, some absolutely lovely shots there. There's a close-up of the baby. We can't really see much. She's just sort of swaddled in a
white... Looks like
a
baby.
Yeah, a white...
Wearing a white
blanket.
Sort of cap.
A little white cap.
Mm.
The big thing that we're all waiting for, no name.
No. Well, they're not stupid, are they?
I mean,
that'll be another statement, presumably. Or maybe it'll be an Instagram post. I mean, presumably the first actual picture of the baby's face will be out there on Instagram. So I don't know whether that's gone out yet. I haven't seen it reported, but we don't know.
So it's a very, very short... We know this whole pregnancy birth has been very stage managed by this couple. They've stated right from the start they wanted some privacy. So they are controlling this. Apparently, this statement... There was a very small press pool, one reporter, one photographer, three cameramen, as well as the couple's own private photographer and a household press office photographer. So very small, not the kind of big open public one that we've usually seen outside the
Lindo
Wing.
Well, not the Lindo Wing coming out of the actual
and
hospital,
the crowds.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, you know, very heartfelt.
Yes. Listen, I mean, all I'm asking for and all I've continually asked for, and it's not up to me, of course, is just that they, engage with the public, because part of their job is to engage with the public. And I understand that they want to be a little bit less kind of out there as much as Prince William and Kate were. But they still have to do it. It's part of their job.
Yeah. Well, this is a good way of doing it. You know, it's one, what we call a sort of pool interview. That means all the broadcasters now can show it at the same time as we're doing now. So everyone's going to get their chance to see it, and it's sort of less invasive for
them. Yes, exactly right. People are already picking up on the words Kenny's tweeted, saying 2.5 to 3 days, they said. So that means the baby was born on Sunday morning. Well, I mean, we may never know. We're told Monday morning. But let's have a listen to Ian Blackford, the head of the SNP in Westminster, the Scottish Nationalist Party, just wishing them well.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I also congratulate the Duke and Duchess of Wessex and wish everyone that's had a birth over...
You've got a complete plank. You got it completely wrong. It's the Sussex. You idiot. Anyway, Rupert Bell's going to come up later on. Rachel, thank you very much indeed. We're still waiting for the name. We haven't heard it yet. This is Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Coming up very shortly, it's going to be the latest edition of Prime Minister's Questions, which won't be anywhere near as exciting as what we're about to talk about, because the front page of the Sun says, Nookie slump for young Brits. No sex, please. We're all on Netflix. Apparently fewer than half of those aged 16 to 44 have sex at least once a week. a new study has found. And now we're going to speak to an expert in all of these matters, not just about sex, but about relationships. She is Angela Mutanda, a relationship therapist and host of Channel 4's Sex Tape. Angela, very good morning to you.
Morning, how are you?
I'm all right. What is going on? I mean, people are watching Netflix instead of making love with each other.
I love the way Netflix is given as a cause. It's clearly a symptom rather than a cause.
Yes.
I think young people have got so much on their plates, haven't they? They're trying to, you know, hold a job down. They're trying to afford to buy a house. They're trying to keep a relationship together. And they're trying to relax. And it's too much at once. And if you look at the statistics, you know, that like sex drive, if you like, has dropped between, what, 2001 to 2012, they've looked at.
Mm.
That's the time in which Twitter and Facebook and all those social media platforms have grown. So something is going on that you know, we're not communicating directly with each other, we're communicating indirectly.
Mm.
And that's kind of where I start to look and wonder about relationships.
Yes. I mean, do you wonder as well whether there's fewer relationships? Because it might be that more people are not actually with someone. And everyone knows that until you get to a point where you've been with each other for so long, you're just bored with each other, that you have more sex if you're in a relationship than if you're not.
It's true. And actually, Relate did a really interesting piece of research where they found that 16 to 25-year-olds are amongst the loneliest. So they're finding it hard to connect with someone else. And exactly as you say, you know, getting into a relationship feels harder and harder than it used to be. And I think there are low levels of trust.
Mm.
I think there's also this kind of novelty seeking. You can swipe right, you know, the grass is always greener thing.
Yeah.
So actually getting into a relationship where you are committed and you form stronger bonds is proving more and more difficult as the goodies on social media go through the roof.
And also there's this Instagram kind of effect, isn't there, where people, we hear stories all the time where people have started going on holiday to places because they want to have a place that looks good on their Instagram account.
Yeah.
You know, they want to go and take a great picture of somewhere or other, so they go there for that. I wonder if that's having an effect on relationships as well, and that, you know, if you're not having some glamorous, you know, gorgeous, beautiful, fantastic relationship,
you can't
take pictures of it, so you're not doing it.
I think that's right. And I think if you've grown up in that kind of atmosphere where what you put out in the world, that sort of superficial picture is everything, you know, you're getting a generation who are growing up going, I feel so much more, but I don't feel as if I have the permission to speak about it, to share how lonely I feel, how anxious I feel. And I think that's really difficult. And I think that's something that I certainly saw when we were making Sex Tape. That, you know, people, there's one sort of outward image and then there's really what's going on. And what people really, really want, wherever they are, is to connect truthfully and deeply with another human being and to feel wanted. And that can come in all shapes and sizes.
I think you're absolutely right. And it goes all the way from a relationship to your workplace, doesn't it? Because you want to feel wanted at work. You want to feel wanted in your family. You want to feel wanted in your relationship. Tell us a bit about Sex Tape, because I've not seen it. I'm terribly sorry to admit to you, Angela.
Sorry, what?
I know. I haven't seen it. Well, I don't know when it's... Tell me when it's on. Tell me when I can watch it.
Okay. Well, you can watch the first two episodes on catch-up immediately after the show ends.
Thank you very much.
It goes out on Friday nights, 10 o'clock on Channel 4.
Right, okay.
And it is a groundbreaking social experiment. So I basically have three couples that I work with, and they've been given a period of time, a week, with cameras in their home and to film, you know, everything, every aspect of their relationships, from, you know, what goes on in the bedroom, arguments, makeups, breakups, all that sort of stuff. And then they come together with two other couples to discuss it with me.
So it's like reality TV on crystal meth, by the time.
Actually, what's so brilliant about it is people watching themselves.
Yeah.
And they can comment on what they're seeing. And it's actually...
Sounds terrifying.
It's not. It's really empowering because they sort of go... Yeah, I can't pretend I don't do that, and that's not very nice. And the other couples can also step in and give feedback. And what is really fantastic is they're doing it face-to-face. They're not saying something about somebody else behind their back.
Right.
So they really have to think openly and honestly about what they want to say. And they also know that their sex tape is next to be watched. So it's really thoughtful what people have to say. And they actually have formed supports with each other. It's become like a little community. So I think it's a fantastic show. Please, please watch it. I'd love to get your feedback.
Yes, no, I will definitely watch it because it sounds fascinating. But it must be a little bit cringy at times as well. No, I mean, which is why reality TV works, of course, right?
Well, yeah, I mean... all right. It depends where you are on that continuum. Some people find it cringeworthy, but they want to watch it anyway.
Oh, I'm not saying you wouldn't watch it because it's cringy. You watch it because it is cringy.
Yeah, but because you learn things about yourself as well. Mm. So people at home on the safety of their couch are going, actually, you know what? I do that. I do things like that, or my partner does things like that, and, you know, we need to have a little conversation. So I think any television that looks at sex in the context of relationships is incredibly healthy, because we've also got this growing concern about a lot of people engaging in watching pornography, for instance, and having this really idealized vision of what a relationship is, and if they don't match up, it affects their sex lives, it affects their relationships. So when you actually look at real people being open and honest and discussing real relationships, you know, warts and all, in the context of, you know, this is how we got together, this is what's
yeah.
good. This is healthy stuff. This is good.
It is, but I'll tell you what, there's also a compounding study running side by side with this one that says that health conscious Brits are drinking less. I wonder if that's got something to do with them having less sex as well.
Trying to say you can only have sex.
I'm not saying that. That's not what I said. Don't put words in my mouth.
Do you know, I think younger people are more informed, more health conscious, much more serious, because I work with a lot of young people as
not,
well.
Not the ones I work with.
Oh, really?
No. They're not at all well informed, and they're not at all healthy, to be honest.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, the young people I come across are just, they just want to take care of themselves. And I think there's so much more information around.
Yeah.
So maybe some young people are just going, you know what, I need to take care of my health. Because, you know, I'm going to live a long time and I want to do it well. I want to be balanced. I think that's to be celebrated anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But then you'd have more sex, because according to the NHS, it's more healthy if you have more sex.
It is. But I think the step before that is to think about intimacy. You know, just giving somebody a hug is also good for your mental
yes.
health and good for your physical health.
Yeah.
Holding hands. I think these things go out the window quite quickly when we've got over that romantic stage.
Yeah.
There's another piece of research that showed that people touch their phones more than they touch each other in an intimate relationship.
Shocking, that, isn't it? Terrible.
Bit worrying.
Very
so
worrying.
It's just like if you can introduce touching, hugging, you know, just giving your partner a kiss is just the first steps to intimacy. That is the building blocks to getting intimacy back into the bedroom.
Marvellous. Thank you very much indeed. I'll look out for the show on Friday. Angela, we'll talk again. Angela Mutanda, a relationship therapist, host of Channel 4's Sex Tape. If you haven't seen it, it's on Fridays, 10 o'clock.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.